This is FBG Jen
and FBG Kristen.
And I'm FBG Margot, host and producer. You're listening to the podcast that will help you keep a lid on the junk in the trunk and inspire you to live a happy and confident life.
Each episode, we chat with motivational experts and celebs and share our own candid adventures in being healthy.
If you're looking for a podcast that's equal parts hilarious and enlightening, well then welcome to the Fit Bottomed Girls podcast.
Welcome back to the Fit Bottomed Girls podcast. This is FBG Margot, and on the line today we have Jen.
Hey guys.
And we have Kristen.
Hi.
And gang, I wanted to tell you guys that we got a 5-star review in iTunes.
Yay!
Hooray!
And please, if you like the show, review and subscribe and leave a few stars. That would be great. And if you leave a 5-star review, we will read it on the air. And today I'm going to read one. It's from FBG in Training. How great is that name?
Aww.
So fabulous.
So fabulous. So it's, I've really enjoyed listening to the shows, especially on a run. There have been wonderful guests, and I enjoy the host's conversations. Short and sweet, but we thank you for that.
Aw, I love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's really
fun. You're an FBG in Training? It sounds like you're already an FBG.
Totally.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing that I hadn't realized before we started doing this about the reviews is, I mean, obviously we love hearing from people, but, like, that's how podcasts, like, climb charts and get seen by more people who aren't, you know, like, who don't come to us necessarily through our site. So, you know, when we're excited about that, it's not just that we're like, yes, tell us how great we are. Like, we want to get the word out. We want people to see this and listen to it. And, you know, when you guys leave those reviews, that helps make that happen. So,
right.
Thank you.
You can spread body positivity everywhere.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Every time you leave a review, what is it? A fit angel puts on some muscle?
Yeah. So.
I love that. Ring those bells.
Ding, ding.
Ding, ding.
Flex, flex.
Yes. So that leads me right into today's interview. And he's a great guest. His name is Derek Flonsreich, and he is with greatest.com, which is a site we all really love. And this is going to be the first episode of our Like a Boss series. So, Jen, do you want to let people know what Like a Boss is going to be all about?
Yeah. So Like a Boss is all about, you know, living your life like a boss. And so we wanted a name that was cute, and Like a Boss is pretty cute, I think. But we also, you know, we have talked a lot about health and fitness. We've talked a lot about body image. But we understand that, you know, it is really difficult for you to fit in the workout and eat healthy if you spend your day at a job that just, you know, is really, really intense, drains all your mental energy, takes up all your time, and kind of burns you out. So we thought, hey, why don't we try to give some actual tips for how to improve your life while, you know, at the office or whatever your work is in your life that you've chosen, by talking to some of these amazing kind of entrepreneurs and leaders and really thought leaders that are creating companies that are truly healthy. And also, I mean, they have a lot of demands. The people that we've talked to, Derek and some of the other guests will have on Like a Boss series, they have so many demands on their time. You know, they lead, some of them lead pretty large groups of people. You know, how do they do that? How do they fit in workouts? How do they maximize their productivity? How do they run their businesses? How do they lead? And some of these leaders just have, they've been given such great advice. They have such great experience. And we ask them all about that. And I think the conversations that we've had, this one particularly, and the ones going forward, are just really fascinating on a personal level, but on a work level. And then also, you know, on a really holistic well-being level that involves more than just workouts, but kind of overall life satisfaction, you know?
Absolutely. And Kristen, we were on their list this year. Can you talk about the greatest list that comes out every year and how we did?
Yeah, absolutely. We were on greatest list of the 100 most influential people in health and fitness.
Which,
yeah, so that's kind of a big deal. Some of the other people on there who maybe you've heard of once or twice. Let's see. So there was Oprah, Chrissy Teigen,
Deepak Chopra,
the Dalai Lama. Yeah, Tony Robbins.
Like, yeah, there's some people.
There were some amazing names. And what was particularly cool about this was that it's not just about, like, influential health and fitness people. It had a real focus on body positivity, which, as y'all know, that is really, really what we're about. So not only was it just amazing to be included on that list, we were number 97, but, you know, the fact that it was a list based on the thing that we really are here for. And the fact that body positivity is so big that they were like, hey, let's make a list featuring people who really promote this. So it was, you know, just like one of the biggest honors. So, yeah, that was pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah.
So we talked to him about how they put this list together, and, you know, they create it every single year, and they're already working on their list for next year. This is how far in advance that they work on these things. So we were thrilled to talk to Derek. He had some really great advice about building a healthy company, and he feels it's the same way as building a healthy person. And one of the things I really liked what he said in this interview, and you guys will hear this, is that he likes to build a pause break into every single workday. Like, his entire workday is brought down right to the minute. He's sketched it out. He knows what he's going to do, but he takes a pause break every day. And I wanted to ask you guys, what are your favorite ways to pause when you need to take a pause break for yourself?
Yeah, so I found that idea fascinating. And I think, like, we're all used to kind of like taking breaks, but it almost feels like a break needs to be longer, you know, like 15, 20 minutes. But a pause is just kind of like, oh, hey, I'm going to go do this real quick and then kind of come back and just reset. And I've actually been reading this book called, I believe it's called Peak Performance, that has that this is like one of the leading things that people who succeed do. You can only truly, really, really focus on a task for so many minutes, like 60 minutes to, like, I think most people max out at 2 hours. And then your brain will basically force you to pause. Like, that's why you find yourself checking in on Facebook or something when you should be doing something else. Like, your brain just needs a break. So I thought this was brilliant that he just built in pauses. And I started, after we did this interview, I started thinking about paying more attention to those pauses and what I do. And then I got some examples from the book too of things that other leaders do. And
I was share. Oh.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to steal all of these and see them in a different way. And I am. So what I have been doing with pauses is about every 90 minutes to 2 hours, anytime I start to get distracted or I can no longer focus, usually it's like, I mean, the basics, like, oh, you can go, you know, I can go for like a short run or something, or I could do some yoga moves, or I can go for a walk, or I make a point to, if I'm going to eat a snack or have lunch or something, I almost always go outside if I can, even if it's just for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, something about just like shifting my environment like that to nature really, really helps me recharge. But another thing that I do that I think is kind of like weird, because I don't think that people would think of it as like a recharging, pausing activity, but I work at home and I'm lucky that I can do that. But I will stop and I will like do the dishes or like fold laundry or put laundry away, because what I do every day with writing and editing and so much communication, it's so brain powered focused. But there's something very rhythmic and kind of almost meditative about if I go fold laundry or wash dishes and kind of turn that part of my brain off and just can kind of zone out and chill. And I'm also getting something done. But I found that when I do take 5 or 10 minutes to go do that stuff, I feel good because I'm doing stuff around the house I need to do anyway. So like, that's kind of a to-do that's off my list. But I also find that I come back and I do have a little bit more creativity and I do have a little bit more energy mentally. And it's a way that I'm not sitting, I'm standing. So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
Awesome. What about you, Kristen?
Well, I too sometimes work in the nice productive things, but probably not as often as Jen does, or as often as maybe I should, because as you're saying that, I'm like, oh, God, that's so smart.
But normally I would think of it like, oh, God, I need to fold laundry, I need to do this, and it's like another to-do on my list. But if I like mentally think about it differently, like, oh, I'm giving my brain a break, why go do something else? I don't know, it feels better somehow.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
the
sure.
perception of it changes.
Sure, totally. Yeah, so I think for me, years ago, one of my dogs got really, really sick and we weren't sure she was going to make it. And I like kind of made this promise to her that if she would just pull through, that I would make a point to snuggle with her every day. Cause you know, you just take advantage of the fact that like, they're always there and they're always, you know, like she just walked in and is looking at me all like, mom, come play with
snuggle.
Me. But yeah, so sometimes I will literally just like, I don't even necessarily leave my office, but I'll just get down on the floor with the dogs or with the cat and, you know, and just like kind of snuggle and breathe that in and enjoy the fact that they're there. Or the other thing that I do is we've mentioned on here several times, I love to read. And for me, like reading for enjoyment feels like really a different use of my brain than reading to like edit something or, you know, writing. So if I've got a novel going, sometimes I'll just step out. I will grab like a sparkling water and I'll go. I too like to sit outside if it's not, you know, the temperature of the surface of the sun, and sit outside and just read like one chapter and drink some sparkling water or something and just kind of breathe and relax and let my shoulders roll back down my back instead of, you know, they start hunching up a little bit. So those are probably my two that I go to. What about you, Margo?
So I have two as well, and I also take little pet breaks. So I have two cats. One of them, the white fluffy one, if she starts meowing loudly, I chase after and she jumps to the top of the cat tower. So we have a little snuggle session there. You know, I rub her back. And the other one is my tuxedo cat. And if she's feeling that way, she'll just show me her belly. And I will literally get on the floor and rub her belly. And we have belly songs that we, you know, we sing together. And it's really, it's very silly and cheesy, but I love it. So that's like my little pet break. But for me, my mom got me for my birthday, March 29th, by the way, next year, just, you know, mark that for everyone. But mom got me an Alexa and I love this thing. It's so much fun. But one of the things you can do with Alexa, and it plays music and stuff like that, but you can play Jeopardy with Alexa. And so every day I take a Jeopardy break and it's only like 5 minutes, but they ask you, you know, six questions. And sometimes, you know, I usually get four or five correct. I feel pretty good about myself. And then that's just like the little mental break I take. And it just like, it's just a few minutes. And then I'm done. I'm like, okay, and I can go back to editing and writing and producing and whatever everything else that I do. So that's the way I like to do it. That's how I take my pause.
How good are you? Are you pretty good at Jeopardy at this point then?
I'm getting good, but I have a lot of empathy for people on those shows because there's things I know, like authors' names I know, like Mark Twain, that should come right into my head. And sometimes, you know, she talks so stiltedly. You know, this author is from Indiana. And I'm like, what? So... I can understand people on stage like getting freaked out under the circumstances, but I learn new things too. Even things I don't know, then I learn some trivia. So that's always fun because I love trivia.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's what I do. So today we're talking to Derek, and we should tell you guys, this conversation is really great. He's a great interview. It's just a little teensy weensy bit Skype-y at times, and we apologize for that, our connection to him. The Skype gods sometimes want to smite us. So in this case, it's just a little tiny bit, but just stick with it. He's a great guy. It's a really interesting interview, and I guess let's go right into it. Welcome back to the Thick Bottom Girls podcast. This is a special Like a Boss series interview, and we'll be talking to Derek Flansreich today of Greatest. Derek is an entrepreneur on a mission to give everyone a healthy-ish attitude. He is the CEO and founder of Greatest, a next-generation media startup working to make healthy living cool and build the first truly trusted consumer-facing healthy living brand for this generation. Greatest currently reaches 13 million unique visitors per month and is profitable. Derek was previously with Clicker.com and NBC Universal's digital entertainment strategy and operations. He graduated from Harvard and has been building brands and organizations that last since his dog walking business at 10 years old. Besides everything health and wellness, he also loves theme parks and theme bars. He is here today to talk about his thoughts on leadership and creating a healthy workspace. Welcome to the show, Derek.
Thanks for having me.
So, Derek, it's going to be myself, Margo, and on the line today we have Jen.
Hey, guys.
And we have Kristen.
Hello.
So, Derek, I'm going to ask you the first question. All of us at FBG love Greatest. I mean, we really love Greatest. It's the greatest. So can you tell our audience how you came about coming up with this amazing and inspiring brand?
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for saying that. We're big fans of FBG ourselves. I feel like we've been following sort of tracks for the last few years. And so it's there aren't enough of us sort of fighting the good fight. And I'm grateful to have all in it together. So, Greatest started now 5-6 years ago. It really came from me growing up struggling with my weight. So my personal story has shaped a lot, and personal struggle has shaped a lot of what Greatest is today. Growing up, I really felt like every brand I turned to wasn't on my side and made me feel worse about myself instead of better, told me what I should look like and how I should feel. And it felt like, yeah, every, you know, TV show I turned on or magazine that I opened or program I signed up for, product that I purchased was not on my side. And so I became really obsessed with what if there was a brand and business that spoke to people differently, that spoke to what I sort of describe as this major shift that's happening away from health and fitness being the point to just being a part of living this better, happier, longer life. And so anyway, I felt like there was a major, major void and a hole of a brand that people love and trust and empowers them to improve and celebrates them when they succeed. And so I started Greatest with, you know, convincing a bunch of friends of mine to start writing for free. And, you know, 5-6 years later, we've built Leave as the, you know, clear and far away market leader in terms of healthy-minded millennials. And we're on this big, bold mission to, like, change the way they think about health. And, you know, it's my life mission. So it's something that I get to work on every single day. And it's been a wild ride. I'll say that.
That's awesome. I love how personally connected you are, like, with your story to your brand. And I know we speak to, you know, women kind of feeling like, you know, so much of their worth is wrapped up in the number and the scale and what they look like. And so it is refreshing to see that coming from a, you know, a guy. And, you know, we're so kind of in the women's world, but yeah, these are the same issues that I think guys struggle with. Has running this company improved your body image, and how has it changed your own personal view on body confidence?
Yeah. Well, so I think this is a fascinating, important issue, right? I think we're all trying to improve people's body confidence. We struggle a lot with things like, we really don't like body positivity at Greatest. We tend to think it's not the full story. But yeah, from day one, Greatest has been very purposefully gender neutral. Obviously, I am a guy, and so my experience is just my experience. And look, guys, there are a lot of other things that guys have in life, so not to whine or complain. But I agree that, you know, it's not just, I think women get it especially hard, but guys too, you know, are presented with body image issues that I think are from an early age, definitely in my generation. You know, you open and look at the people on the cover, like, they look just as unrealistic as the women do on the, you know, female magazine covers. And so I think that there is, yeah. So I think it's a really serious issue. We have a majority female audience. We have actually quite a large male audience too. Somewhere between 35% and 40% of our audience is male. So we're very proud to be gender neutral. We find that people in our audience tend to not like being treated like they're all the same. And so some sites and some brands tend to sort of treat them all the same, and they tend to not. But we think that the future basically is increasingly gender neutral. Now, don't get me wrong, I think focusing and super serving on a specific audience type, whether that's gender or sort of, you know, health stage, do I think that's a smart move? Yeah, absolutely. And I think that allows you to go even deeper and build a deeper relationship. So I don't think there's a right or a wrong way, but I think the way we've approached it, and in part because I'm a man running a health and wellness brand, you know, that's not an insignificant thing, right? I know a lot of men who run women brands, and that confuses me a little, frankly, because I don't think it makes all that much sense. But, you know, I think that the gender neutrality is crucial. In terms of how it's affected my body image, you know, I struggle with my weight today. I mean, I think that you'd think that running a business tied to health and wellness improves your health immensely. And in some ways that's true, but the whole running the business gets in the way sometimes. So I think I'm sure you guys can sympathize. So I think that part is hard, and I think in terms of body image, it's not something that you fix. You know, I think it's something it's a journey and something you're constantly working on. So I would say my body image has absolutely improved over the last 5-6 years. But you know, there's been times in which it's dipped and times in which it's been really heading sort of in the right direction. And so I think it's a journey.
Yeah. Now, let me kind of switch gears here. You do something called 100 Most Influential People in Health and Fitness List. And huge, huge thanks for including us on that. Yeah, that was, we're humbled and honored and just, it was amazing. And it's been really interesting for us to see that list through the years. So I wonder, this is sort of a multi-part question here, okay, but if you can tell
there's
us...
100 questions.
Yes, 100 questions for each person, 2 for the Dalai Lama. Can you tell us a little bit about what goes into making that list? Because I understand that the process is pretty intense. And then I would love if you would speak a little bit about how you've changed it over the years, because this past year, it was really focused on body positivity. So... yeah, so 2 parts.
Yeah, I love it. So I handpick every single person on that list. No, I'm kidding. no, that's not how it works at all. In fact, just the opposite. When I first started Greatest, the way that, like, nearly the first thing I did was I reached out to the 100 sort of folks, people that I thought in this space, you know, were doing it right. And, you know, I think of Marion Nessel, or John Romanello, you know, people who come from like very different perspectives, but who were doing it right. I thought trustworthy, accessible, sort of focused on what they're doing. Reached out to them and asked them for help before Greatest even launched. And when I launched Greatest, they were the ones that sort of put us on the map, frankly. If you'd call it today like an influencer strategy, back then it was just me emailing people and like bothering them time and time again until they'd answered.
You emailed me. You emailed me, Derek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. People that I was inspired by. And so that approach really sort of, that list basically came into our first of these 100 most influential. We've been doing that for, over 5 years. And from day one, it's been extraordinarily metrics-based. So what some people think is that we decide what influence means, and obviously we're ultimately deciding what metrics go into it, but what we were trying to always assess is less who do we think is influential and more who is actually influencing people. Because the thing was that it could become like a little bit of a barometer of how we're doing as an industry. And so I think, coming back to your observation, I'm very proud of how the list has evolved. But I'll tell you, it has nothing to do with our metrics. Maybe it has something to do with us increasingly including the power of social media and stuff like that. But we've only been including that stuff as it's gotten more powerful, right? And I think in the last few years, what I've seen is more and more people who have a positive, body positive, empowering message, who are more real, right? Who are less manufactured, who are less about just starring on a TV show, but who actually have real sort of relationships with their audience, those people start to rise. And selfishly, it's great. I don't like many people on the list. You know, there are definitely a few people I can't wait to sort of, you know, become obsolete and not relevant. But it's and we internally have, you know, every year we get a lot of flack for the list because people are upset that XYZ is in there at the top. How, you know, and they are such, you know, snake oil salesmen or something, or if people are feeling like nobody great is on the list. And, you know, our justification is always, you know, we're defining influence as who really truly reaches people, not passive judgment on what that influence is like. But I agree that I think that we are, I think it's happening. I think the movement towards people, frankly, like yourselves, reaching and influencing more and more people is happening, and that is such a net good. It's so important, and so I'm proud of how the list has evolved, but we don't tweak it, you know? We're very careful. And by the way, it takes we're just about to start working on it. I mean, it takes...
Man.
Wow. Well,
it's kind of unreal, actually. And so it's always a bummer when people give us flack about it. You know, there's like angry people in 4chan or Reddit, you know, complaining.
Oh, sure.
But we put a lot of work into it. I mean, there's a lot of metrics, right? Like, how do you, probably the biggest subjectivity involved is how you assess influence, right? And so what we tend to do is we just try to cover all our bases. And so we're including everything from how many YouTube followers, how many scientific peer-reviewed academic studies you've published, to how many products you've launched, to, you know, kind of, and we have different weights on all of it, right? And so anyway, it's wow. You guys don't want to see the spreadsheet at this point.
Except I kind of do.
I know, no, same here, I know. Sometimes. I don't know, it sounds kind of amazing.
Yeah, I might sneak in there Mission Impossible style just to kind of like take a look myself. I mean, I'm really curious about it. But, you know, speaking about your office environment looks like a really great space for your employees just to hang out every day. So, you know, tell us about what it went into, like creating the office space that you have for the people that work there every day.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think culture and the environment comes a lot from the top. And I care about it a lot. In fact, the two probably biggest things that prompted me to start Greatest, besides sort of my own personal experience and my sort of personal passion for the space, was that in my one and only job at a college besides Greatest, I was at a startup that was successfully sold to CBS, and I had very little to do with it. I was literally just there for the ride. But I always thought I could do it bigger and better. And look, I've had that hubris pretty well beaten out of me over the last 5-6 years. But I still think I was really right about a couple things. And the first thing was that a vision and a mission that's true and genuine and lifelong for the founder is a really unfair advantage. I think it gives an amazing amount of legitimacy, and it's a lot easier to convince people to come on board, investors to support, brands to, you know, buy advertising. I just think it's a lot of an unfair advantage having a mission. And so that was a big part of why I started Greatest when I did, as opposed to waiting. And the second thing was that I thought not focusing on the culture was a really missed, you know, unfair advantage. I found for me personally, when I was well rested and slept enough and worked out on a regular basis and ate relatively healthy and was able to keep my hours kind of to the times when I was the most effective, that I was way more effective. I couldn't believe that people had to show up at 8 and leave at 5, no matter what they were actually doing at their desks. It just seemed so silly to me. And the fact that, you know, for example, at my company, I used the lunch hour to try to work out, and people kind of frowned on that, right? And I thought, look, when I come back from the gym at 3 or 4 p.m., I'm actually still working as hard as, you know, I was in the morning, and everyone else is, you know, dozing off at their desk. So, you know, you guys are missing something. So anyway, I became really obsessed with this idea that, you know, the job of a workplace is to give people a chance, kind of remove all the obstacles in their path to make sure that they can do their best work, kind of however they work best. And so that a lot of that comes from me kind of crafting from scratch a culture that I thought was going to help me perform my best. And then trusting people enough as adults to be able to figure that out for themselves as well. So I think the culture piece has to, anyway, kind of come from the founding team, and then, you know, gets sort of imbued into the culture based on the core values and the communication to them, and then the hiring especially. Hiring is probably the second most important thing, I think, to making that happen. But yeah, we have a fun, I mean, look, we care a lot, we work really hard, but we have totally flexible hours, no vacation policy, you know, we provide perks and benefits that like a lot of other companies don't, but it's all because I'm like ruthlessly about the bottom line, and I believe that it all means we do better, faster, more effective work. And so.
That's awesome. So, do you think it would be fair to say that like health pretty much plays like an essential role in basically everything you do and even your business decisions?
Yeah. I mean, I've been trying to, so we've been saying a lot internally that we're trying to build the healthiest company to work for on the planet, which I don't know what that means, but, you know, sounds good. I haven't quite figured out exactly how this all fits together, but bear with me. So I think they're actually extraordinarily tied. So for me, my naive, crazy belief in health and wellness is that what really works for each of us to find the things that we love doing that actually like push us forward, right? That are good for us. Mm-hmm. And then that's the only way we keep doing it over a long period of time, time and time again, and it actually has a really lasting effect. And over time, you can't do it all at once, and you kind of have to build it step by step. And it's not about what you're doing, but why you're doing it, because if you have a really strong why, then you're much more likely to follow through and keep doing it. And you're much more likely to have the right mindset approach to it. I think building a business is the same. And not everyone thinks that, but I think a business is also built step by step. I think it's also about making short-term vision and mission that you're trying to reach, and every, on a regular basis, continue to improve, find the things that work. And actually, so I haven't quite figured that whole thing out, but there's some, building a healthy company is probably the same thing as building a healthy person, which is probably the same as, building a financial success. And I'm working to try to prove that and also to figure out how to communicate that all very fast.
It sounds like you're very well on your way, though. That's fantastic.
I hope so.
Yeah. So is there any single piece of business or leadership advice that you have received over the years that you want to share? Or if not, is there a piece of advice that you've given beyond the gems that you just gave us? Because that was stellar. But and something like that you might want to share with our listeners who might be interested in building a healthy business as well.
Oh, I don't know. So much is just, it took me a really long time to take breaks. I think one of the healthiest things you can do is go on vacation.
Yeah.
I mean, real vacation. I'm a little extreme about it. Every 6 months, I take a week completely alone and unplugged. And it's a work week. Like, I don't work. Like, I'm not in the business, but I'm working on the business. And I made the mistake of not taking that for the first two and a half years of Greatest. And it sounds crazy, but I was, even though I knew what I should be doing, you still have this sort of perception that the harder you work, the longer hours you put in, the more that you have to prove that you care, the more you're going to push it forward. And frankly, the more you're in it, the less you're paying attention to sort of how you're doing it, right? Approach. So anyway, I started taking that vacation and came back and thought, wow, I sort of so clear and strategy is so, makes so much sense. I'm able to see time to focus on how I'm doing, because in an odd way, business hasn't been about me for a long time. Like none of the things we do today, I could do myself. And none of the success that we've had is due to anything but me hiring great people who can figure a lot of this out. And all the things I used to do, people do better than me anyway now. But yet, I'm the one who can kind of get in the way, struggling or stressed or not taking care of myself. The more the business gets stalled, it's like a very bizarre thing, but I think that vacation is very important. And that's a hard lesson learned that I've probably heard a million times said really well and convincingly. And then until I really experienced it myself, a couple of times I probably didn't learn.
Going back to in your intro, you went to Harvard, and I'm kind of obsessed with the movie The Social Network, and my friend's husband went there just before Mark Zuckerberg. You were there after Mark Zuckerberg. Do you think the film kind of captured the culture there accurately? And then my follow-up is, what was it like to work at the Hasty Pudding Festival? Because I love following that every year.
Oh, my God. All right. So I think The Social Network is a terrifically great movie. And in a weird way, I would actually say that Harvard, when I went there, was, even in the post-Mark Zuckerberg era, really not entrepreneurial. I know that sounds weird because we think of Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg as these entrepreneurs, and they went to Harvard, and they're like, they both dropped out, and they probably dropped out for a reason, because Harvard is mostly made of people who check boxes. Like, I have no idea how I got in, basically. I'm not just saying that to be humble. It's just like I was not a box checker, And those people around me really were. And so it was interesting how that movie on campus, I think it came out right after I graduated or something like that, but inspired a lot of people on campus to think entrepreneurship is cool and not just banking and consulting. Maybe consulting while exploding had something to do with that, but maybe not. And now it's actually, I think, surprisingly entrepreneurial. So that part is good because we want, the more smart, passionate people who are trying to build business, the better. Not the more people building businesses, the better, but the more like people who care and work really hard at it. So, all right, so that's Social Network. I mean, I don't think it really captures what life is like, but I mean, it's a movie.
So what did you think of the Hasty Pudding Festival? Excuse me.
Okay, so the Hasty Pudding theatricals. I've never been asked this on a podcast, but I'm thrilled to talk about it. The Hasty Pudding Theatricals is a 12-man burlesque show that happens every year. Burlesque basically means it's like sort of a fancy way of saying drag show. And so it's 12 guys. It's a big, kind of big deal at Harvard. And every guy I knew tried out for it who had any even remote remote talent in singing and dancing and acting, but you got to do all three of those things. And it's basically the most hilarious, satirical, musical show. And every year, it's different. Written by students, the music is written by students, all the backstage is done by students, there's a professional choreographer and director, but everything else is done by students. It's got an insane budget every year, and they sell out tickets for like 3 months or something. And it's a little bit like being on the, like what I imagine being on the football team must be at like a school, because when I said, hey, I'm in this thing, I got in my summer, and I performed with the cast, and it was literally like, it's a traveling show. They perform in New York and they perform in Bermuda. Like I didn't do any schoolwork, actually kind of okay with it. And it's a very weird show where six of the guys play guys and six of the guys play women, but it's hilarious and weird. And every year they sort of celebrate a couple famous celebrities. So there's a man of the year, woman of the year. So I met Timberlake, that was kind of cool. I met Anne Hathaway, and I performed my little heart off for, I never wanted to do any of that stuff, honestly, in any way seriously. I don't think I'm good enough to do any of it seriously, but I had a hell of a fun time. And it was definitely, it's the kind of experience that, I don't know, I would never do it again. It was miserable too, but it was, like, I can't imagine anyone doing any of that stuff seriously, but it was a very humbling experience. It's a couple things, couple times in my life where I've truly been unable to be the best, like in any way, shape, or form, and been unable to lead, right? Not even like yell the loudest from the bench. Because I didn't grow up with the kid, right? And same with, you know, I was never like the star of these shows. And so it was a really humbling experience to just be a part of a team and just have to support however I could and somehow keep doing that for 3 months and keep it fresh. So I don't know. This is probably a longer answer than you were looking for.
No, I loved it.
That was awesome.
The end. Had a great time.
That was awesome.
I don't do it anymore. Just on Tuesday nights.
So I know you were talking about breaks and the importance of vacation and everything, and it kind of like, I feel like we're in this culture where everyone kind of wants to like do it all and have it all, and you want to have time to, you know, have the career and fit in your workouts and eat healthy and all of that. And I don't know if you use the word balance or not. Some people are like, you know, balance exists, or no, it doesn't. But I wanted to get your tips on kind of how to design your life so that you can kind of do all the things you want to do and have purpose. Your tips for how other people can do that, and then also just how you have personally been able to do or not do that?
Well, so I will say that I think it's a really important question, and my answer is probably not as exciting as I wish it were. I'm lucky. I have a girlfriend and a job, and that's basically it. So that's a lot, but you know, we have people on our team who have, man, so many other responsibilities. So I feel like, you know, I'm like, who can really take a week off with no email? Come on. Like, you know, I'm lucky that I could do that. And I'm, I think, very grateful and aware of that privilege. And so I think that anyway, that's my first thought, is like, a lot of people juggle a lot more. The second thing is that when you are running a business, especially as a solo founder, right, which I don't recommend, that is the truth, you do need to do a lot. And I think, and I'm probably on the far end of like anal around planning. I have every second of my day planned, and there are moments in my day in which I literally have a 30-minute block every day that says pause, because I literally plan out the times that I don't have anything planned, or I'll fill it up with time, you know? And so I'm very intense about it. And so I time block everything. I wake up, I'm a big morning person now. I wake up at 5 a.m. I'm basically done with work by the time I walk in the door. And then I go to bed earlier than like most people, probably triple my age. But that's like the life that I've chosen to lead. I think you have to be really obsessive about it. I think a part of this is you have to constantly be bettering you. And a lot of that, I think, is about I think it's all about actually you being in control. Again, it's similar to health. It's different for everybody. And what you need to do is to be able to customize it for yourself and almost be unafraid and brave enough to say the way things work for other people is not the way that it works for me. And that's tough because most people just go with the default side of French fries. But I don't know anybody who takes the default side of French fries who is, well, it's a strong statement. I don't know anyone who always takes the default side of French fries who is like super healthy, right? I think you could sometimes take the default side of French fries. But if you always buy the defaults, you'll end up where most people have, which is, most startups fail, and most people, look, let's face it, in this country are not healthy, you know? And so, like, literally, like, scientifically not healthy, you know, biologically. So I think I think a part of it is sort of doing things on your own. I don't know if any of that was helpful.
That so
was
helpful.
That was the deepest statement about French fries that I've ever heard in my life. Like,
you guys,
that was fantastic.
You guys don't accept the default? I don't know. But sometimes I worry. I have, like, a bad memory. Sometimes I worry I'm, like, somebody else probably said that meaningfully better, and I'm just, like, bastardizing it. But the did you guys see the McDonald's fork?
No.
But
McDonald's did this video. I don't know if it's – I mean, obviously it's a joke where it's like a fork, but the tines at the end, you know, the little, like, prongs are made of French fries. So you can dip them and then, like, eat them.
That's hilarious.
Wow. That's a terrible, delicious idea.
Yeah. Like, all the best things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so you have given us a lot of – excellent advice, some fantastic tips, and I have just one last question for you. It's pretty important, and it's one that we ask all of our guests at the end of our interview, and that is, what is the last song you listened to before you joined us?
Oh, my God. I am very glad that I listened to some of the other podcasts so that I knew this question.
Oh! Good for you.
You are prepared, man.
I'm very prepared. I always try to be over-prepared. So, but it's not like I was, super here messing it up. So, I don't know. I was listening to the Cold song by Maroon 5. I wish it was like something very deep, but it wasn't. The song I listened to that before that was Don't Think Twice, It's All Right by Bob Dylan, which I feel like is something somebody would say to get some like indie cred. So that's like my indie cred song. But the other one, the true one that I just listened to is Cold by Maroon 5.
Awesome.
That's a great answer though.
Yep, that's awesome.
It is.
I'm also very into Ed Sheeran right now.
Who isn't?
Shape of You, that song.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I listened to that today. Yeah.
Yeah, that song.
Have you seen the Fitness Marshals video for the dance to do to it? Because I am very, very into this, and I plan to have the choreography down, like, post-haste.
I actually haven't. I'm also very into the Fitness Marshal, though. He is amazing. He was actually on our list. I don't know if you guys saw it.
Oh, yeah.
First year on the list. People love him. I mean, he's...
What's not to love?
Yeah, no. I mean, he would have done very well in the Hasty Pudding, I'll tell you.
That's for sure. I will send you the video if you missed that one because it's I think it's the best.
All right, I'm excited. I can't wait. We'll try to do. We sometimes. I mean, I frankly don't sit in the office and do fitness martial videos, but sometimes people in our office do exactly that. I do that in private.
That is so amazing. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. It was wonderful talking to you, and you're very inspiring in so many ways, business, health-wise, all of it.
Oh, well, you guys are too, so thank you for having me. It's really great. I'm grateful to be here, and I enjoyed the questions. Had a lot of fun.
Thanks. Awesome. Next time we'll have to ask about the theme bars, though.
The theme bars.
Yeah.
Next time.
Next time.
Love this show? Tell us why in a 5-star review on iTunes and we'll read it on the air. Also, make sure you are a subscriber. If you want to reach out to say hi or have a question about a recent episode, yay, well, feel free to email us at podcast@fitbottomgirls.com. And if this podcast jives perfectly with your brand, consider sponsoring the show. Get more info by emailing advertising@fitbottomgirls.com. Find all kinds of Fit Bottom goodness online and on social media at Fit Bottom Girls, Fit Bottom Mamas, Fit Bottom Eats, and Fit Bottom Zen. And if books and movies are your thing, check out the other podcast I co-host called Book vs. Movie, which you can find anywhere where you search for podcasts. Thanks for listening.